All right, we're here for a chat, and I have got with me Kristen Radiker Schaefer. She is the Democratic nominee. She is running for Congress in the Missouri 7th. She's been on the show before, back in the primary, and so we had a couple of folks in that race. We got to talk to both of them, and Kristen came out ahead, and so she's carrying the banner into November for the Democrats in the Missouri 7th down in the southwest corner of the state of Missouri. So, Kristen, thanks for taking the time. Thanks for jumping back on the pod, and how you doing?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, always nice to get to talk to all the different folks running. So how is it going? Like, how does it feel like it's going? What's your perception of the race right now?
I think it depends on the day or the hour that you ask.
Yeah.
It's going pretty well. I feel like I'm gaining momentum, and people are starting to, you know, start paying attention to the upcoming election. And we've got a lot of volunteers that are signing up, and we've got the donations, which are all just small dollar. Like, we don't have a single donation over $500, which I'm totally fine with. I would rather have the lots of small dollar donors like we've been getting. It's just, to me, it's more meaningful. Like, sure. I know I can't contribute $2,000 to a candidate, but I know if I give $5 to a candidate, it's because I really support that candidate.
Right.
So, we've been getting the donations rolling in, and the, you know, fines are coming in, bumper stickers, all that kind of stuff. And people are starting to get, like, pretty excited about it. And then I find out that I have friends that have no idea that I'm running until they see, like, a bumper sticker with my name on it, which is kind of fun.
So. That's got to be talk about sticker shock. Like, that's got to be quite a thing to be around and see your friend's name. Like, what?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. You're running for what?
So I saw something posted recently by Ray Reed, friend of the show, Ray Reed, who ran, he had the primary up in the second, and he posted a thing that I thought was a very interesting question to pose. So he said, I think a lot of politicians start off asking themselves, can I win? The question every candidate should ask themselves is, why am I running? Do you feel like in your race, it's a why am I running race, and that's what is motivating you, versus a win, lose, you know, there's November 8th and there's November 9th. Right. And we'll vote on November 8th. And no matter what the outcome is on November 8th, it's not like on November 9th, everything's going to be different. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you were to win your race, we're still going to have to, you know, we're still climbing up a hill. So do you feel that in your race, as, you know, are you focused on what are the polls? What are the numbers? What can I do? Or are you focused on why am I doing this? And can I get that message out there?
We haven't done any polls, and they really don't do a whole lot of them around here because it's not considered a competitive district, which is fine because I'm not a competitive person. I started running because I wanted to figure out ways I could better help my community.
Right.
And I just feeling like, you know, I was doing some small stuff or whatever, and it just wasn't having any impact I wanted because everybody was hitting those same boundaries, like, you know, or the hitting the same walls that I was hitting, like, trying to do anything. So I decided to run to try to make some things better and even just call attention to some of the issues about starting a small business or the small farms that we have around here, the family-owned farms that are just being sold. The land is being sold to large investors or even foreign investors a lot of times. So I just watching that go on, I was like, how can we stop this? I know that we can. And how can we make the environment better for people who are willing to put in the work, but don't have the resources or don't have anything to fall back on or don't have the support around them? They should still be able to pursue something because that's kind of what our country was built on. Whether that's starting their own business or just, you know, working a job that they love or finishing their degree, anything like that. It's been important to me to make that more possible for people.
Yeah.
And I just felt like when everyone's hitting the same barriers, it's not because they're bad people or have bad intentions. It's because the system is kind of rigged against them.
Yeah.
So I'm running to call attention to that and to try to help as much as I can. And if I win, that's my plan. And if I don't win, then I will go back to helping the people that I can individually. So, I mean, it doesn't, I would be able to help on a larger scale, I suppose, if I do win, but it's not really going to change the trajectory of what I'm trying to accomplish.
So I read in the Joplin Globe, there were some Q&As that the candidates all submitted. And Eric Burleson, the Republican in that race, basically, when asked about, a big issue regarding inflation, blames, of course, the Biden administration, and then says that he would support real and effective policies to fix the supply chain crisis, and says that he would support policies to automate processes and industries in transportation and shipping. Isn't he advocating to get rid of basic blue-collar jobs?
That's how it seems to me. That's how I read it. It was not a very detailed answer, so I couldn't, I can't read his mind, but it certainly seemed like he was saying, we'll just cut out the workers and make everything cheap.
If you automate transportation, you got to load, move, drive, haul, unload, all of those jobs. How much is that going to be automated, and how many workers are we talking about losing? In a system that is, I think you highlighted in your answer, it's a complex issue that has moving parts that stretch from, all the way from when you pull a product off the shelf all the way back to potentially a foreign country where the product begins.
Mm-hmm.
So do you see it as a silver bullet issue, when we're talking about the economy right now and supply chains and inflation? Do you think it's as magical as get government out of the way?
No, I wish it was that easy. I don't think anything is that easy. We didn't build the supply chain that we have overnight, and we didn't build the economy and all of its complexities, in a day. So it's going to take a lot and a lot of tiny little things to be tweaked to have an impact on the whole economy without turning everything upside down overnight, because that's not going to work either. We have to take a first step and then a second step and kind of build it in a sustainable way. You can't do that by just saying, okay, government out, because we've seen that unfettered capitalism means that we're cutting jobs, we're cutting benefits, we're cutting hours, we're just destroying economic opportunities for people just for a class of people that don't actually need more money, that are just focused on making a profit, because that's what they see business as. So if you can't cap greed, you can't really create the trickle down economics that is promised by getting government out of business. It sounds great. It sounds great in theory. It just doesn't work in practice.
That's an interesting, I had never had that visual in my head about, the very idea of trickle-down economics is that at some point in time, there's a peak, right? And when you hit the peak, then it must naturally all begin to flow back downwards, because otherwise you couldn't continue to build. But if you just keep building up, 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 and there's no peak to the wealth, then it's impossible to have any type of trickle-down, which, we already know it doesn't work anyway, but it's impossible for the system to work that way. So as a small business owner, I assume that you have lots of contact with other fellow small business owners, like most of us do. How much, are you hearing from them about, just blame about inflation? Or are you hearing from them, this is how, we need to make adjustments, and we'd like to see real adjustments, not just finger pointing?
A lot of people are just kind of confused and wondering when it's going to stop. And I totally can relate to that, because I have trouble finding the right cake boxes that I need. I have trouble finding, heavy cream was out of stock everywhere here last week. I used to buy all of my, milk for my shop at a local dairy, out of Purdy, Missouri, 40 minutes away from here. And it was the best milk. Like they, a lot of times they delivered it the same day that it came from the cow. So it was like a cream lined milk and it was great. And it made all of our products better. And they had to close down.
Wow.
And then I was getting it for like not that much more than what you buy milk at the store for now. Like you can get it at Walmart. I think it's $4.44 right now. And I was paying like $5.15 a gallon, which I would much rather pay that and get local milk. But just like all the other industries are so consolidated, dairy is also consolidated. So when you have all of these, you know, dairy industry people,
right,
demanding low prices on what they're buying from the farmers, and then you have the equipment to do that is out of reach for most people without some kind of subsidy or
right,
some kind of government help, or even just being independently wealthy, I suppose, then you're just left with, I think we just have grocery stores now to buy milk, and they're not local.
Right.
They're, none of them are locally sourced. So
that is such a catch-22. Like instead of us paying what it costs for a gallon of milk from a local farmer, we wind up paying less, not that much less, but when you're talking about the volume, right, of milk that is being purchased for the farmer themselves, you know, if it's a 50 cent difference, 75 cent difference per gallon, and you're talking about thousands of gallons, that adds up really, really fast. And suddenly the local farmer doesn't have a shot unless they're big enough to get massive corporate handouts. We can call it Farm Aid all we want, but it's a corporate handout at this point. You know, we're not talking about $20,000, you know, seed loans. We're talking about millions of dollars for massive corporate entities. I assume that's why your dairy farmer closed.
Yes. And it's because it's when those massive dairy industries can say to the government, hey, man, we're going to have a huge shortage of dairy if we can't get this money. And that's going to affect children. That's going to affect restaurants. That's, you know, they can say like all of the like real life and economic impact of this issue with not having enough dairy, and the government's going to be like, oh, we have to avoid that, and so they're going to give them the money. But like my small family dairy in Purdy, Missouri couldn't go to the government and say that, because they're out milking their cows and they're out bottling and they're making their cheeses and they're going all the time. They don't have access to a lot of the same like luxuries of lawyers and, you know, accountants on staff that can tell them, how do you maximize your profit? It's just like, how do you make a good product? And that's, but I mean, you end up, I think I put it in the Globe article, like you just end up sucking the wealth out of these farming communities. And then what you get in return is processed food at higher prices. That's less, yeah, like less quality, and it's coming, you know, from further away, even though it may have just been grown or, you know, produced down the street initially.
Yeah. So what are you hearing from folks as you're going around, as you're talking to folks, what's coming back to you? Like, what are the things that people say, here's what I want to know about, and, you know, here's what I want to tell you about?
I'm definitely hearing about inflation, like we just talked about, but I'm also hearing people say that they don't feel like anybody cares about this area.
Yeah.
And I'm getting that when I'm talking to, you know, Democrats. I'm getting that when I'm talking to Republicans. I'm talking to Independents, and they're all just like, you know, we like Washington doesn't care about us. Politicians don't care about us, and like that's literally why I ran. That's because I care and I want to make things better. And it's frustrating to hear that, because people get paid to represent us. People get paid a lot more than most people in this area get paid to represent us, and they don't even show up.
Yeah.
And so I don't understand how they, you know, feel like they can represent the people. I don't know, maybe they're just not trying to represent the people in the middle of the country, like the heartland, where like so much, like, you know, it is referred to as flyover country, or
yeah,
like, you know, the states you have to drive through to get to the mountains or whatever.
Yeah, we've leaned into that. I mean, that's,
yeah,
know, that's our brand.
Yeah, exactly. And like, but it's like, there's, I mean, like a lot of what area I'd be representing is like the Ozarks, and like they're gorgeous and amazing, an amazing resource, and something that are, you know, kind of at the heart of our country. And as I was in Scotland in March, and everybody was like, oh, where are you from? We're like, Missouri. And they're like, oh, where's that? And we're like, oh, it's like in the Ozarks. And they're like, the Ozarks? And you came here to Scotland? And we're like, yep. And they're like, man, I would love to go to the Ozarks. Like, that's what everyone in Scotland was saying. They said it way cooler than I just did. But yeah.
Yeah, that's always one of my answers too. And folks, you know, want to know, like, why stay in Missouri? And I'm just like, we have everything here. We have some of the most gorgeous outdoor spaces you can possibly find. You know, it's mountainous. You can be, you know, in a gorgeous forest and on a beautiful river and catching, you know, fish in a clear, wonderful, cold, you know, stream and all of those things. And you can go see a Cardinals game, or you can go to Springfield and see a Cardinals game, and, you know, go to some great places. And, you know, Branson is Branson, and it's a special place. folks love it.
You bet.
But, you know, we've got a ton of different stuff, and you're right. I mean, your district is chock full of reasons to love what's going on there. But I guess, you know, if your goal is to take corporate money, represent corporate interest, and keep getting elected to higher and higher office, then why worry about the folks in the Ozarks?
Oh, I've invested in my community and decided when I started my business here that I was going to stay here because I love the people here, first of all. The people in Joplin and in Springfield and basically everywhere in between, Mount Vernon, and every little community, they're like some of the kindest people I've ever met. And they are so hardworking and they're so creative and innovative. And a lot of them just have lost hope in having a better community. Mm-hmm. And I get that. I really do. I can see why in some of these communities they've lost that hope. But a lot of it has to do with the poverty. And I understand why people are skeptical of, like, Democrats wanting to, you know, I'm very fluent in Republican talking points. I understand a lot of where they're coming from. So I understand why they say, like, oh, you know, people won't work, or they just want to, you know, a free lunch or handout from the government. And when I'm talking to people who are on, you know, some of these welfare programs, they would love nothing more than to work and be able to also take care of their children, which is, just seems like a basic thing. But, you know, with the cycle of poverty as it is, they can work and work and work. And, you know, one badly timed check, like where they're like one badly timed medical incident, one car accident, one check coming in a day late or something like that can throw them into a place where even if they have been working really hard to catch up, they just can't get on their feet.
Yeah.
And that's not something that, like, a lot of politicians can relate to. I mean, it's certainly something I can relate to. Like, technically, I probably would fall into the poverty category by what I make, but because I live in such a very, very low cost of living area, I feel like I live just fine. But I see other people, and I don't have children, so I know that that's a huge cost that I am not having to, you know, foot the bill for. And if I did, I think I'd be feeling, you know, the lower income I have much, much more. So,
yeah,
I
can tell you the first month of daycare, you'd be like, oh,
exactly. Yeah. So, like, my sister graduated with her master's from MSU, and she couldn't find a job, to cover the cost of childcare for her one child that wasn't old enough to go to school. And so she had to wait until she was old enough, just to be able to get her into, like a preschool program that was covered, so she could actually work.
You hear folks talking about right now, and as a small business owner, I'm sure you can relate to the issue of, you know, what do you pay somebody, right, in a small business setting, and folks saying, well, nobody wants to work. And I always want to add to that, it's nobody wants to work, comma, for the amount of money you're willing to pay. because of exactly what you're describing. Is why would you, you know, if it costs $800 a month to put a kid into a daycare setting, and your take home pay after taxes and any health insurance and anything else that is taken out is $2,200 a month, and 800 of that is gone before you even pay your rent or a mortgage, if you're lucky enough to have a house payment, right? All of those things. What's left over? Why would you put yourself through that? It doesn't make economic sense. And with, you know, with the pandemic and folks kind of getting to take that step back, it seems like folks have just simply realized the value of their time in a more realistic way that we just had sort of lost mm-hmm. track of, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So you have really centered your campaign. I would say maybe I'm wrong mm-hmm. about this, but it feels like you have centered your campaign on the small business economy, that you seem to focus on the reality that if we're going to change what we have, if we're going to make a step forward, call it progress, call it whatever you want to call it, if we're going to put ourselves in a better position than we are now as a society, that we're going to have to focus on small businesses. Am I crazy to glean that, or is that?
I think that's definitely a large part of it. Yeah.
Why is that? Why do you see it that way?
Well, for one, like I've seen how other small businesses and myself, like I've been able to build something, and I work really, really hard. I work like some weeks I work 90 hours, or, mm-hmm. you know, some weeks I work only 50 hours, and that's a good week, but
so going to Congress would be like a vacation.
Yeah, right. I still plan to work too, though, because I spent all the time building this. So yeah, I've seen the fulfillment that I've got from this, and it's because in my life I've been able to surround myself with people that like pour into me. I pour into them. They're like, you know, we mutually my employees, like I can choose who those people are. And even though they don't make nearly what they're worth, they like coming to work. At least they tell me they do. And, you know, they make enough money that they're not living on the streets or anything. I don't know like what exactly their financial situation is, because most of them have another income in their household besides what they're making for me, but nobody's like begging for raises every week or anything like that. I think
not until they hear this.
Well, they do. Well, I mean, they all know they make more money than I do. That's partly why. And I think they see how hard I work also. So, that's one thing that, I think that I'm kind of able to provide a better quality of life for some people, because I had a couple of employees tell me they've never liked a job they had before, or felt like their boss cared about them. Yeah. And to me, that's a good life. And I'm never going to be wealthy, and I'm totally fine with that. But I think that there's so many people that would love to be in the position that I'm in. And so I want to know how I can help other people achieve similar things. And so that doesn't really answer your question, but I guess that being said, when I was able to, I think I mentioned this on the last podcast as well, but that was a long time ago. When I was able to get a grant from the government, like a small business grant around the time COVID started happening, mm-hmm. I was able to get a $3,000 grant. That $3,000, I have turned that into probably, if I had to roughly guess, I'd probably made over $50,000 off of it, just with whatever I was able to just invest it back into my business. And so that's a really good ROI.
Yeah.
But the government put $3,000 in, and I probably, like in the long run, I will definitely pay back more in taxes than $3,000 because I was just able to buy one extra piece of equipment that I've been needing. That's what a small business owner does. They take the very small resources, well, the huge to me, very small to the government, $3,000, right, and they turn it into something because they love what they're doing and they care about the thing that they built. And same with like farmers, like when you have family farmers, they love the land. They care about preserving it for their future generations. So when you have the government coming in and passing big restrictions and what all to like preserve the land, I think you have a lot of people around here saying, but I don't, like, I already care about my land. You don't need to tell me how to care about the land that I've been preserving for generations in my
stewardship
family.
Stewardship is an inherent mm-hmm. part of the small family farm. I mean, it is built into it. Otherwise, the mm-hmm. farm wouldn't make any money if you didn't take care of it.
Yeah, so it goes back to just kind of what I was saying earlier about, like $3,000 in the hands of somebody who really cares about something is going to go so much further than, like, the airlines that you have to bail out to the tune of millions of dollars if something goes wrong. And that money is going into stock buybacks, and it's going into executive salaries and things like that. And then they're not necessarily saving for the next time.
Right.
But, like, for me, like, I was able to get that, and I was able to get the PPP loan. And I don't remember the exact amount, but just in full transparency, I think it was around $12,000. And, like, I have saved back as much as I possibly could of anything that I've been like bringing in to put into my business and to make sure that my employees get paid. Like I spent the money that the PPP loan on my employees and keeping them employed through the duration of the pandemic when there were no events that people needed wedding cakes for or whatever.
Yeah, we had the same experience where it was just like, well, mm-hmm. we're not firing anybody.
Yeah.
You know, and we got to keep paying everybody. So mm-hmm. I mean, that's what that was for. And it's funny that, you know, you're describing that piece of equipment, and I'm thinking about that small, the dairy farmer that mm-hmm. closed down, because I'm thinking, like, imagine if instead of millions of dollars of corporate, subsidy money for these massive corporate farms, we could spend less money to impact more businesses in that way, that $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 for that size of a business, and allow that business to stay running and spend less money doing it than mm-hmm. creating these bailouts. And in the end, you wind up with true local products, better products usually, mm-hmm. like you described, and in a self-sustaining economy. You know, I remember when we got some of the first round of the stimulus money, and we wanted to put a sidewalk in for my daughter in the wheelchair. We wanted to put a sidewalk to get to the backyard. And I hired a guy who I had represented on a case previously. He got 100% of that money. And he and I have done business in, you know, several different back and forth transactions together in the same community with money going back and forth, you know, and that, mm-hmm. so that dollar goes from me to him to another local business to another local business that he then refers to me to come and get their legal work done. And the dollar just keeps circulating around mm-hmm. that community as opposed to getting mm-hmm. sucked out and then given to a giant corporation and then put into somebody's pocket that doesn't even notice it.
Yeah, and they're not circulating that money. They're putting it in to make themselves more money.
Right.
So I'm like, the people that are saving that money are the ones that don't necessarily need it often, not always.
Yeah.
So that's exactly a more succinct version of what I was trying to say, that the small amount of money stays in those communities and it goes to more quality of life things than if it's going to these large corporations, which I think they're like, large corporations are fine. A lot of them got there by working hard, but some of them are just like only out for profit and
yes, that stewardship
actively,
versus
and actively
the profit.
Actively hurting other like people, like exploiting labor and whatnot. So that's kind of, you know, how I feel. And then also a lot of the money that I make goes back into paying my taxes, because I don't have a fancy accountant and a fancy lawyer to get me out of paying my taxes. And I don't mind paying some taxes.
Right.
It just bothers me when I know that these giant corporations aren't paying anything and I'm over here making, making it by and paying more than they are.
Well, some people would call me a fancy lawyer and I still don't know how to get out of paying taxes. So good luck with that. So how can folks best help your campaign? You mentioned obviously donations, having the money for the yard signs, the bumper stickers, all that stuff. What else could folks do? You know, if I'm somebody in the 5th district or the 1st district who's listening to this, and I think, man, that would be awesome to have, you know, a small business owner in the Springfield area to represent that area versus Eric, I can see the whites of his eyes, Burleson. Like, how do we help you out?
Well, yes, donating would be fantastic. And also just retweeting and sharing things that I post on Facebook is always helpful as well. I've been getting a lot of traction on social media lately, which is really great. Of course, that helps a lot when like Jeff Piper retweets me, you know, that's always a huge boost to anything that I'm, you know, putting out there. But, and if you know people in the district, just, you know, let them know that I'm running. Word of mouth is a huge way that my campaign is spreading, and especially, you know, the lower budget. I know that my opponent had millions of dollars in PAC money pouring in during the primary alone. Mm-hmm. And you know, just kind of the message that, like, I don't want to read into Burleson's motives or anything, but I do care. I really want to help the people of this community, which is what I'm going to do whether or not I'm elected. But I think that I have some ideas that are maybe foreign to people that are elected right now. And there's a lot of Democrats out there that don't know a lot of people from the middle of the country and don't maybe know some of the struggles of rural communities here. So, I mean, I wouldn't just be like representing Democrats. I would be representing the people here to the Democratic Party and even to like the Republican Party, who some of them are out of touch with what's going on here. So
I think that's a great point.
Yeah. Like that's people get confused sometimes about that. Like, wait, you're not on board with every little platform the Democrats have. I'm like, I'm not on board with any single thing that any platform or person has. Like, I'm my own person. I have views that are different. And I am like a very like creative thinker. And so most of my ideas may not ever work, but they will. I think a lot of them would, but a lot of them would spur ideas that are maybe different. And so we could try some different paths.
Yeah.
That whole like way of thinking though, that seems to be like it's this way or it's that way, is not something that my brain can hardly even comprehend. Right. So just a message that, you know, somebody actually cares and wants to represent them and not the party and not money or the big, you know, like big business or anything like that.
Or the next I just want everyone climbing the
ladder. I'm like, and people are like
you don't have to ascribe any motivation onto your opponent. I will. He wants to be getting into Congress because then he wants to try to run for Senate when that comes up again, or something bigger than that. I mean, I'd say that's likely, but I don't know.
But like, I honestly, like, I barely even want to like be in Congress. If I can't help, I don't want to be in Congress. If I can't make things different and better for people here, I'd rather not win because I think I can do it on the ground. But I also think that I've got some ideas and I have the skills of listening and understanding people and responding in ways that they also are fine with hearing. That I think is sometimes disarming to people, like Republicans, stuff like that. So I've had a lot of people be very, very receptive that were initially hostile to what I'm saying once they realize that I'm saying it in good faith and I want to know what they think. So that's what I am about and that's what I'm going for. So
excellent. Well, I've got it at Kristen R. Schaefer SH. EAFER on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And Kristen for Congress, that's Kristen with a K, KristenforCongress.com, where you can read about her solutions and everything else and donate right there and get connected. So, Kristen Radiker Schaefer, thank you very, very much for your time. Thanks for running. Thanks for what you're doing out there. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to talking with you many more times.
Thank you so much.
The Heartland Pod is a production of MidMap Media, LLC. Follow us on Twitter with @TheHeartlandPod. With email, you can reach us, heartlandpod2020@gmail.com. Online with heartlandpod.com. Subscribe, and please sign up for our Patreon with patreon.com/heartlandpod. Become a podhead or an official Podgressive today and unlock all of our content. See you at the next show.